Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's Call on Buddhas and Butterflies. We are hanging out in houses 9 and 10, and we are working with transformation of grief into its healthy role of dispersion. My computer is popping up every pop-up window right now. Forgive me, I'm just going to close those. And we're going to hop on into today's session. So if you haven't already, feel free to bring to mind your intention for today. And sometimes when I think of my intentions, I think of it as like going fishing. And the intention is sort of like the fishing lure that we're going to toss out. And we actually don't know what we're going to get back. Unlike fishing, we get something. We just need to interpret it in terms of what that actually means, what it seems to be like, how that seems to be in our body, what the images are, what the sensation is, how does that seem to sound, taste, smell, if it does in any of those ways make sense. However it is, it pops up, there's information in there. So the intention is like the fishing lure. And then I'm going to invite you at the end of the session to sit within contemplation when we play the song at the end to notice what seems to come through in and around that material for you all. Okay, loves. This is a little bit different from body talk philosophy, which says your attention is important. And that is correct. That seems to happen after the intention has been digested at the level of the mind. For most of us, we're not in the place, we're still in a place of relativity, we're operating relationally. And the idea with that is that the mind needs to make some meaning or make some sense of things. So the intention helps it to do just that. Okay. Thank you for all the information that's coming on in around your intentions for today. I'm going to invite you, if you haven't already now, just to get set up, get comfy and cozy. I invite you to turn your attention to your breath amongst all of that. Every inhale, an opportunity to call in. To receive. To drink in life. Every exhale, an opportunity to release, to let go, to make space, and every breath, an opportunity to sink a little deeper into that cushion below you. Any part of that is pleasant, even neutral, taking a moment to be with it, to drink it in mindfully, to savor, to linger. Let it rumble through you. And I'm going to invite you to rinse and repeat that in a different way. I'm going to invite you on purpose to find something to savor. You can do that outwardly with eyes open. You can do it inwardly with eyes open, downcast or closed. Taking time to let your senses go for a wander throughout your space, outward or inward. And as you let your gaze land on the things that are beautiful, pleasant, easeful, even just neutral, letting them tour around, and invite them to eventually land on one thing in particular. Landing on one thing in particular that just feels extra juicy to be with. And as it lands on that thing, noticing the qualities, see if you can sum it up in a couple of words, maybe 2, 3, 4 words or phrases around what it is you like about that thing. And then savoring those qualities, letting them be the things that you're mindfully embracing and allowing space to be amongst. And around that all, noticing how the body responds, There's always multiple responses happening in the body. So the invitation is to allow your attention to see if you can pick out selectively the parts that feel good, useful, pleasant, or again, simply neutral. And to savor those too. So you're savoring the point of your focal attention with your gaze, your senses. Feeling something that feels good to be with, as well as noticing the body. I'm just having a little quirky smile to myself for a second because I'm laughing a bit at my own senses and how they operate. I have a little bit of synesthesia, so I don't love this explanation, but the down and dirty, quick and dirty explanation is that sometimes my senses cross over a little bit. So seeing and feeling become the same. So sometimes I think I'm seeing something, but it's really more of a feeling quality in me. Sometimes I think I'm feeling something, and occasionally I'm seeing it, but it's usually the other way around. So even when I guide that exercise, sometimes I'm using the word that doesn't necessarily correlate to maybe your experience or my experience, if you happen to have something at all along those lines. And as much as we say seeing it, know that you can navigate that by feel, taste, smell, sound, however the senses operate. It's more of a sensory experience. And being mindful in the body amongst that all. And as you particularly take time to savor that, and perhaps staying with it just a little bit longer if you've got space to do so and it's still feeling good to be with, I'm going to offer these words amongst all of that. Thank you for the opportunity to gather here today. And thank you to all that's gone into this sweet moment of connection. Thank you to the families that created you all, the ancestors that created them, and the lineage that's holding it all. And thank you to the medicine that each and every one of you arrives here with and interweaves into our group. It's an offering that happens in subtle language, subtle sensory language that somehow unifies our container and allows for a greater attention, focus, mindfulness, and therefore expansion to arise from our time together. So thank you for being here mindfully and noticing yourselves in the process. And thank you to this earth, grounding, nourishing, supporting, holding within a level of stillness in the maternal field. And thank you to the sky above, giving space, vastness, room to explore, and holding the paternal field. And thank you to the fire, connecting us to the very edges of the beyond, the unknown. And thank you to the water, carrying our emotions, sometimes in mysterious ways, sometimes in ways that carry our consciousness to the depth of our bones and our blood. And sometimes in ways that just allow us to be reminded of our own energy and come back home to ourselves and our bodies. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Om Kau Sai to life. So as we head into today's session, it's going into the TMJ joint to start off with, the temporomandibular joint, and the joint is interesting. In body talk, we often think of it as being reciprocally related to the sacroiliac in our hips, and it is. And there's sort of like a secondary reciprocal of it. And using the word reciprocal, you can let float on by if that doesn't quite add up in your data bank. But for the body talkers in the crew, that's my geeky terminology there. The TMJ, and I think I've spoken to this here and there, but the secondary reciprocal is where the skull joins the spine, the OA joint. So they're meant to work together. It's meant to be like a hinge that operates at the same time. And if any one of those joints gets gritty in any way, adhesed, if the fascia around it gets bound, then it can throw off everywhere in the whole system. In relationship to those four points, as well as we can feel some aches and some wobbles and different tensions, I'll put it simply that way, throughout the physical, mental, emotional realms. Right now, as we start off with the TMJ, we're going to look at that relationship to the OA joint, where the skull joins the spine, and essentially working with the consciousness of how available are we to open up to the nourishment of life. So TMJ opens up our jaw to receive obvious nourishment in terms of food. The back of the skull, where it joins the spine, is sometimes referred to, gosh, is it in Chinese medicine or Taoism? I'm mixing it up a little bit in my brain. And the energy fields, I learned about it through breath work. I didn't actually learn about it through Chinese medicine or Taoism directly. I just forget the source of it. But in breath work, it's referred to as the mouth of God, and you can substitute your own word for God. If you like divine, universe, life, whatever word fits here, use that word for you. And the idea here being that the openness to our realms that are beyond the seemingly obvious materialistic world, the sometimes referred to as like the spiritual realm or the life force energy, this is the mouth that opens up to receive that. And it's meant to be loosey-goosey in the same way that our jaw joint is meant to be loosey-goosey. So the question becomes, it's like, how open to nourishment can we be? And one is reflective of the other. So if we typically are someone that feels like life itself seems to be a constant uphill challenge, like we have digestion challenges, like we have just difficulties getting what it is we seem to want in life, like our body's always aching, our heart is always sore. Our typical patterns just feel kind of like stuck in some ways. Like our patterns just feel really, really held. This can show up through these areas. So, as we take our attention to them, we're going to do a couple of things. We're going to start off with circulation of all of the healing resources. Blood that carries our passion. Excuse me. Blood that carries our passion. Nerve our communication. Lymph that drains our toxins, gunk, waste, low self-esteem, overthinking, overanalyzing, along with chi or vitality, consciousness or awareness, right down to all the little guys, electrons, protons, solitons, neutrons, working with the sounds, the colors, the frequencies of all the chakras, major and minor, endorphins, hormones, and endocannabinoids that lower inflammation, anxiety, depression that help us to heal at all levels, in particular our immune system and our nervous system, but really notable. Those are just like the more notable areas, as it's really present everywhere in this system. We're going to also work with overall yin, the essence of nourishment that brings in the often referred to as like the maternal qualities. And then the yang, the masculine essence of protection, that's often referred to as the paternal qualities. And we can think of these as being the parents, our inner parents. Regardless of gender, we all have an inner nourishing force and an inner protecting force. And these two are meant to work together and interweave in the same way that marriages are meant to. And marriages are sometimes on rocky ground out there. Same thing internally in the system. There can be some rocky internal marriages because there's just some instability. Primarily in how it is we're open to being held through where that skull joins the spine and being open to having the flow of life move through us with ease. And we're going to also work with hydration here, helping the cells to take in water and joy and release any impurities that no longer need to be here. We're also going to simultaneously run a cellular repair, which helps to restore cells back to their fullest potential of health through these areas. Then we're linking it through to the alignment overall between the heart chakra and then the brow, pardon me, the brow, the throat, the brow, and then the crown chakra. Primarily heart and head, or pardon me, heart and crown, but it's working with all of them as we move between balancing heart and head overall. In the upper direction, as I outline them, it becomes more the quality of being able to release or surrender the understanding that the parts of you, how does you got formed to be the way that you are, is personal. If we look at it from the flow downward, from crown to head, it's working more so the quality of embodiment. So the understanding that it's not personal, meaning you, that then leads you to being able to more deeply, readily inhabit your body. So And the inhabitation of the body is sort of like the end result of that flow of nourishment being really deeply established or turned towards or embraced. All of that is linking into house 10. House 10 is, we've talked about it a little bit, career, achievement, recognition. It's the house of also outward self-expression. So think of this as the house of authenticity. I haven't spoken to it this way really before. But what allows us to be us is the recognition, again, that head, pardon me, heart to head pathway, that how we came to be actually isn't so personal. It doesn't necessarily make the challenges of life go away. What remains is still now the opportunity to live into the body and find ease amongst the patterning, which ultimately tends to allow for some level of fading of those habitual patterns of the system, which in turn allows for you to be even more you. So that's a tall order. I outlined something that, in a sentence or two, that often takes people 10 years of dedicated sitting mindfully within themselves in various different forms and practices. Not necessarily meditation that can be involved, but it's definitely not the only pathway or definitely not a required pathway. As we work with the 10th house level of authenticity, we can think of it as just bordering on the edges of what would it be to trust your even verbal expression? What would it be to dress the way that you wanted to reflect what was happening inside of you? What would it be to non-verbally express yourself in other forms, maybe dance? So it's looking at how would your system be authentically if nobody was watching and it got to do whatever it wanted and it didn't expect anybody to ever see it, simultaneously being in the presence of other people, but feeling unabashed, no level of self-consciousness. And then moving towards that directionality takes time. They're stepping stones along the way. I'm not suggesting that we do that all at once. In fact, I'm suggesting that you do the smallest step, the most obvious step, the most easeful step that moves you in that direction. And what gets in the way of that is often a feeling that we're not going to be who other people expected us to be when we grew up. And sometimes that can also mean giving up the familiarity of being the scapegoat. Oh, I know. The familiarity of being the scapegoat is something that we usually don't really like, but at the same time, we often end up holding it closer to us because it's at least known, and without it, we could be exiled, we could be outcast, and like, then what? And the feeling of who am I without that scapegoat, and who am I with that as a scapegoat are both centered on the same coin. And it's the coin of the fear of being unwanted, the fear of not being valued within ourselves. And that in turn ties into our authenticity. We're gonna run a Sidri on this fear of being unwanted and the authenticity. This is stored in 10th house terrain. This is stored in the hormones, the endocrine glands, the endocrines. How does they all work together? Where they produce their hormones and their sites of action. We're going to include in that the non-Westernized understanding of things that also act like endocrines. And amongst that all, it's not something that we can like really tangibly, mindfully feel. We don't typically feel like we feel the flow of blood when we're working out to a degree. We can feel our nervous system state, but we don't often feel the flow of how estrogen and progesterone and testosterone and the 30 other plus hormones that are in the system are acting and flowing, because that would be a lot for anybody to be able to be mindfully tracking. Maybe some people can do it if they're holding some certain depth of contemplation or in a breathwork practice or meditation or something like that, a little bit here and there. But to be able to do all of them simultaneously is a really big job. And that's where we're going to be targeting the Sidri is through the endocrine glands. Notably, we can talk about a few of like big ones that we talk about often in body talk, but this is just like the standardized ones. We're going to broaden our net to target all of them because they all work together as a team. So we need to work with all of them. But a few of them are the pineal, the pituitary, the thyroid, the thymus, the pancreas is actually part endocrine, also part non-endocrine. Exocrine is the fancy word. And also the ovaries, the energetic or physical testes, and the adrenal glands. So, with those of us born with those testes, energetically, you still have, in body talk ideologies about this, the energy of your masculine qualities hanging out there, energetically speaking. And the adrenal glands are like the little party hats on top of the kidneys. These ones are standing out as this one that's not on the standardized list, which is the perineal body. There we go. It's in the very center of the perineum, the space between either vagina or testes and anus. It's like a little diamond band of tissue, and right in the center of it, there's a little spot in there that acts very much like an endocrine gland. So we're going to be working primarily with, well, all of them, but notably primarily with the adrenals and the perineal gland. And in amongst that, there's actually a fear of being seen. So ironically, there's this idea if I'm seen, I won't be wanted. And yet you can't be wanted without being seen. So the system's stuck in a loop. So wanted and seen create this like closed loop, which keeps us stuck in this place of never being able to authentically step into who we truly really are beyond the conditioned ideas that we were raised with. So as we work with this all, along with the scapegoat energy, with that sea dream, we're also working with the tension that creates around, without other people around me, then who will I be? And what might I have? And I could lose, I could lose a lot of things. I could lose standing in my community. I could lose my reputation. I could lose my relationship. I could lose my sense of self. I could go maybe even insane. I could actually lose like everything that's here. And ironically, the fear of losing everything typically will manifest itself the more it is we have it. And once we navigate our way through the fear of losing everything, it loses its grip. So it's like paradox in its finest form. As it loses its grip, we're able to more steadfastly, authentically express ourselves. So this all works really deeply together. All of that is being defined as, I'm going to call it anticipatory grief. So grief that hasn't even happened yet. It's like the grief of just witnessing your patterns and how they're holding out and going to a certain edge and going like, nope, I'm not even going to look at that one because if I do, then things are going to change and that's going to mean like risky business. And I don't know if I can take that kind of a risk right now. Yeah. Additionally, that's affecting in turn the foundation of the self, which is the hips, the pelvis, the alignment of the musculature that forms the pelvic bowl is a massive component here, as is the ledge, I'm going to call it, of the diaphragm gland, of the diaphragm. But notably the foundation of the hips there, the pelvic bowl. I just see it working with the diaphragm. So as it loosens up, it's going to also simultaneously loosen up some adhesions through the diaphragm, which will in turn allow for a little less bracing around the heart. It's going to release the back and the shoulders as that sort of all flows together. It'll also take some pressure off of the digestive system because it won't have to work so hard to figure things out around acceptance and rejection, which is in our immune system, which is mostly in our digestive system. Okay, so the sea dream. It's going to continue for the next. Sorry, I'm getting three numbers. Hang tight. Okay, this is new. I haven't seen it play out this way. Hang tight, hang loose, hang however you want to hang. The idea here is that for some people, they're going to need it to run longer than others. So we're going to run it for a range of 7 to 17. The three numbers that I got were 7, 14, and 17 days. So you'll be in one of those three camps. And just to be on the safe side, We're going to run it for the next 17 days. So at the outside for folks, it's going to be around mid-March, March 14th or so. I feel like I'm in the 17-day camp. Maybe you are too. Maybe you have a knowing of that. Maybe you don't. But either way, we're just gonna run it for 17 days. I had a moment of like, are we running this 17 days just for me? But no, we're running it for the length of time that it's going to take for you to get the layers of that that are attainable to be touched and digested and integrated into your system. Okay, so amongst that all, working with the C, circulation of all the healing resources, including blood that carries our passion, nerve or communication, lymph that drains those toxins, gunk, waste, low self-esteem, overthinking, overanalyzing, along with sheer vitality, consciousness or awareness, right down into the little guys, the electrons, the protons, the solitons, the neutrons, working with the sounds, the colors, the frequencies of all the chakras, major and minor, endorphins, hormones, and endocannabinoids that lower inflammation, anxiety, depression, that help us to heal at all levels, in particular our nervous system and our immune system. Also working with circulation of hang on, something new is coming in. It wants to circulate first planetary energy of Venus. Okay, so Venus energy is very much about relational balance. It's very much about harmony and order. And it's also about addressing any fear of solitude and helping us to find our desires for ourselves that are not needing to be chased off by the fear of if I do that, then people won't like me. So if I satisfy that desire, I'll be isolated, is the basically fear that it's balancing out. Okay, cool. Okay, so where were we? Circulation of electrons, protons, solitons, neutrons. Circulation of the hormones, endocannabinoids, and endorphins. And again, those endocannabinoids working through nervous system, immune system, whole body, really balancing yin and yang, the feminine and masculine essences of nourishment and protection, and offering a sense of being reparented from the inside out. And then hydration, helping the cells to take in that water, that joy, and release any impurities. Followed by D for defrag. Much like a computer defrag or a spring clean, taking the qualities of the elements and the pieces that no longer need to be here and what remains can be readily reorganized and utilized for healing. Then all the R's, reevaluation, recontextualization, reprioritization, getting out of rock and hard place type of thinking, opening up to possibilities where it may have seemed like there was none before. Integration, introspection, shift the underlying consciousness. Think of this as the release, the surrender, the letting go. Okay, amongst that, running one more cellular repair, and this is inherited. We're going back through dad's side, a fair ways, we're going back 6 generations. Just taking a moment to feel into this. It's working with something re around relationality. Feeling quite dangerous, like quite in need of being separated from or isolated from. And not in like the good, healthy way of holding your own sense of self, but in the sense of my sense of self isn't actually even really formed. And I need to isolate myself from other people around me before I can actually form that, which is creating a limitation and not allowing for the appropriate amount of identity to develop before you then separate from the herd, so to speak, and hold your own identity. And then somehow you can then go back into integration in a way that honors unity, in a way that is, I'm gonna say it in a new way. I haven't spoken to it in this way before. I kind of call it interbeing or co-being. And we talk about tensegrity in body talk. We haven't necessarily talked about it, I don't think, in this series for a while. The idea is that every part is holding their own, and no one part is you need to do more or less than the others, and it's having an equal contribution in its own way that's unique to itself. So as you honor your uniqueness, your contribution is to that of being a part of the tensegrity that upholds the interwide web of humanity itself. Okay, so amongst that all, I'm looking at experiences of relational abuse, which have led to the sense of needing to be isolated from other people. For some of you, that's going to be a little bit different than others. So we're actually going to keep this on purpose open and wide, so that the realm of abuse might have been in your masculine lineage. It might have been sexual, it might have been physical, it might have been emotional, it might have been financial. It doesn't necessarily mean that it was one relative that abused the other relative. It could have been that a stranger came in and created some level of sexual violence or physical violence, or there might have been like an emotionally scarring thing that happened in the school, or financial abuse could have happened with a boss. So it doesn't necessarily mean that it happened between relatives. It could have easily have happened from any other source. So that is to all say that the source of it isn't as relevant as the fact that it happened, and the pattern of isolation is the key part to focus on. So this isn't going to be helped by figuring out like who or what or the details of the story. It's more going to be supported by looking at the pattern of where am I keeping myself separate? Where do I hold myself separate from other people? And how does that cause me personally, not just grief, but it feeds my fear of other people? Where do I feel divided from other humans? And that's going to give me information as to what's being held within the family lines. And we literally base our whole lives on these sorts of things. We literally base like where we're gonna live, who we're gonna hang out with, how we're gonna work, how we're gonna be, which community people we orient towards. And we create certain levels in a way that it feel like good, healthy divisions. And also, it also reflects to a degree a certain amount of where our own judgments or rigidity have been stuck from the lack of healing in our past lineages. So let's take away from what you're doing in terms of how you've operated your life or something. It's not as bad, it's quite good. Go you. And also get curious about it because it's reflecting something in and around how it is we have held something in our bodies through our intergenerational lineage, primarily through dad's side in this case, and that's the cellular repair that we're working with. Okay, that is not your average standard thing in cellular repair that we see. That's really cool that it went into that level of detail and depth. Really love that. That's hanging into and through the back and the shoulders. Sorry, back, shoulders, and neck. It's going into a broad area, so like mostly upper back, shoulders, and neck. Nope. I tried to make it tighter. Okay, we're keeping it vague on purpose. It's actually the whole, oh, okay, not necessarily vague, but it's working with how the whole entire spine as well as shoulders work together. Got it. Just take out my little momentary of judgment piece on that all. Forgive me. So it's like, how do the spine and the shoulders work together? How do you hold yourself tall in dignity while in connection and find your sense of being able to respond to yourself and to others in a well-balanced way without needing to capitulate to people-pleasing, to making yourself wrong, or the other direction, making yourself really righteous, or my version of this is usually some level of like, well, I know more than they do about that. So the one-upmanship. So however you do it in your system, we all do it in our own ways. It's all being defined by the consciousness of cultivation of humility. So feel free to go into any of the pieces that have really sort of sparked from anything that we've highlighted today. There's going to be some juicy material there. Whether you contemplate that, meditate on that, breathe on that, spend time in nature around that, re-listen to the session and just see what comes through around that all. I have one person, I have a couple of people actually that take microdoses on purpose and they reflect in those ways and they look at what's there. Okay, so whatever that looks like for you, all roads lead to Rome. So however you get there, you get there. And I'm totally open to whatever tools you have, whatever tools work for you. Without needing to make any of the other tools right or wrong. Although I have my biases, I'm not a meditator. my partner is a meditator. It's interesting territory for us to be in. Anywho's, I digress. It just hit a pause point, so I'm just waiting for the next piece to come through. So I'm just sort of chattering on and nattering on a little bit here. Okay, so we're still with the spine and the shoulders, and it's highlighting like how they're meant to move. And I want you to think of like a jellyfish. You know how like the jellyfish, I think it's a jelly, or is it a stingray? I should know my aquatic animals better. Sorry, stingray. You know how like they can like flap their wings and somehow like their whole spine is like undulating all at the same time? It's working with that. And that movement was something that you were very readily capable of. In the womb space, when you were all fluid and all liquid, and you were an aquatic being. We were an aquatic being before we were a land animal, which is unique. Not isolated though, other things do it, like dragonflies. They spend their whole life, not their whole life, pardon me, they spend part of their life in the water, completely immersed into the water, and then they pop out of the water. And they spend the next part of their life totally on land. So in a way, we're kind of like really advanced dragonflies, if you're into dragonflies. I like dragonflies. Anyways, coming back to the womb space and the stingray flapping its wings and the spine undulating. It's like this capacity to rule with the fluid motions as your template that you are formed with. And it's just a call back to, even though you don't necessarily have the same physical capacity to do what you did when you were in the fetal realm, to call back to being able to remember that state of consciousness or awareness and what was not as rigidified in your mind as ideas and understandings and thoughts and beliefs about the world and about yourself and about others. There was a greater sense, I'm going to say, harmonious tensegrity or unity. That was found in that state of the womb. I'm going to define it as the consciousness of lack of expectation. So lack in like the best way possible, lack of expectation, because there wasn't preconditioned knowledge or knowing. Okay, we're going to tap this part out here. Invitation to breathe and to receive however feels right for you. Okay, we're heading back up to where we first started this all. TMJ joins to OA, the skull joining the spine area of the body. And then we're linking that right into the digestive system tract. I mentioned earlier that's where a big chunk of our immune system also hangs out. And we're looking at the relationship of which just feels like an immense amount of pressure. And that pressure is primarily being caused with like inability to process grief in a healthy way, which I think is the condition of modern culture and man, in all honesty. By mad, I mean human. Not males. But yeah, the condition of modern human. It's like this sense of things feeling indigestible. Like, how could I possibly move this through? How could I must possibly move through this? This is absolutely overwhelming. It's kind of like that sense of, you know, when something first shocking arrives on your doorstep and you feel that gut punch, and it's just like a, ugh. Except it doesn't really, like, kind of go away. There's a sense of it just being, like, stuck there. So wherever there's been lingering grief that hasn't completely moved through, that hasn't allowed us to stand in what grief is meant to do. There's a saying in mythology that grief and love are sisters. So as we stand by grief, we stand by love. So grief is the acknowledgement of the depth of love that we actually had for that thing. And it's actually not meant to be around how on earth will I ever, how on earth could I possibly. There's just a sense of acknowledgement of, I had a lot of love for that, and now I don't have it anymore. And that creates a certain ache or depth of hunger or longing in the system. And that I'm going to suggest is actually a healthier way to grieve. I'm certainly not alone in this. Stephen Jenkinson, amongst others, I won't rattle off the resources now, but anything to do with grief, Frances Weller is a good one. Okay, I'm going to stop. But there's a lot of beautiful resources on grief out there and that speak to it from a deeper angle that is looking at it more from the sense of a grounded, unified, tensegrity-oriented human kind of a place. And as I talked about it, I see that sort of like pressured, walled of ball of grief. Just starting to kind of like slither around like a snake in a good way. Some snakes get associated with a bad rap. I think of snakes as representing, amongst many things, in this context in particular, bringing in the consciousness of awareness. As we highlight that there's even a different possibility, a different way of processing grief than has ever been done before. It allows the system to be able to digest what it needs to. Which might, for some of you, beg the question, what are we doing when we do an emotional release of grief in like the standardized body talk way? I'm going to suggest that when we do it that way, we're just releasing the old debris that's already been digested and allowing for a deeper level of awareness to enter the system to meet the remnants of what remains to also support the next layering. Because grief isn't ever meant to fully go away, it's just meant to not be seen as personal, as an energy that's meant to help us to disperse, to let go, to release, to move again. It's like what calls us back through to live and to be in touch with our vitality and the life force energy that's meant to animate our whole system again. Despite the fact that what's happened before has been painful. So it's an energy that holds a depth of service. It's not, grief does not have an easy job. Man, oh man, do I have empathy for grief? And yet, without the love that it straddles, it would actually be an impossible job. It actually wouldn't be able to do it. It would become stalwart depression and lead to not wanting to be here anymore. So it's meant to be mindfully anchored in love. It's meant to be mindfully held. And that's just my personal read on what it would be like to be grief, if I think of being grief. I like to personify things a lot. So that's just how I sort of sense that and bring it into my awareness. In our session, as we highlighted in this way, the awareness is already starting to flow, and we're actually starting to see that emotional release of grief happen spontaneously. I invite you to take a deep breath into your digestive system, into your stomach, into your intestines. It's the area that I'm primarily highlighting when I say digestive system, which is a very big system, but in through the stomach and the intestines, which is where most of your immune system lives, is in the intestines. And then we're running a permissions related to the stall, and the words are just simply, what if just for now I didn't need to figure it out? The figuring it out usually is the thing that creates the problems and creates the stuckness, ironically, and we think by figuring it out that we'll move through it somehow. What if just for now? What if just for now? What if just for now? You didn't have to figure it out. What if just for now you didn't have to figure it out? And really feel the body as I say that. Really feel the digestive system. I'm going to say it one more time. But bring your attention, bring your awareness right into your intestines, your stomach. What if just for now you didn't have to figure it out? Okay. That's linking to also loosening of some adhesions around where that ball of grief, and for everyone it'll be slightly different, has been sort of like stuck. Some of you have tinier, sounds terrible. Some of you have bigger balls, some of you have tinier balls. But the idea is that the ball of grief itself is, and hopefully you're laughing along with me, that's good for grief too to laugh, is holding some adhesions in some territories there. And it's like as you release the fascia, the connective tissue around this, there's a more easeful like glide through the tract that it's attempting to move through. Because grief is also meant to move through your intestines as well as your lungs. As it moves through the intestines, it also takes the pressure off of the lungs to make breathing easier. When we have challenges in breathing, it's notably related to inability to digest our grief. Thanks for appreciating my humor on that one. Okay, loves. Around that all. We're running lymphatic drainage through now the intestines and the lungs to support that balance of the release of grief in the ways of. We say that, and I don't want to repeat it every time, but when I say it in that way, it means like the release of the idea that it's personal, not the release of the energy, because that energy is meant to be in motion and it's meant to be a healthy thing. Just to remind us on that, I'll say it once in a while, but that's what I mean when I say that we're releasing the energy of the grief, we're releasing the grief there. Interestingly enough, it's linking into the eighth house. So as we head back into the houses that we've sort of been touring through recently, the eighth house is very much about death, rebirth, and regeneration. It's very much about, excuse me, usually working with the emotions of fear. And as it does that, there's also a certain amount of grief that happens on the other side of death. So whenever we go through a rebirth, whenever there's a new beginning, there's grief. This is more so the grief that the lungs hang out with. Lung one acupuncture point hangs out in the upper outer region of the chest there, and almost in like the inside of the shoulder really, and it works with new beginnings. It works with the capacity to offer and receive forgiveness and step into something new. The points of forgiveness. So if let me make sure I'm on camera in a way that I can. Yeah, I think it's pretty good. So lung one is roughly around there, upper outer chest, almost inner shoulder. And the area that works with forgiveness is just a little bit above that. Let me try to lean forward with that. It's sort of like if this is my collarbone, it's just on the upper, it's just above the collarbone, on the outer edge of where it comes out to the shoulder blade. Hopefully my words are a good description for that. So the idea of the lung one being slightly below that point, no mistake. So as we move through the layers of left side, we work with receiving capacity to receive forgiveness for yourself as well as other people, from other people. And then the right side works with actively being able to offer forgiveness to yourself as well as to other people. And as that comes into harmony or balance, we're able to step into something that's new or different. And this in turn allows the heart to open. So as we work with it, it releases adhesions, contractions, bracing, anticipation of fear, and allows for the entire chest to expand, lifting the chest upward and outward towards the front of the body, as well as upward to the sky, to the heavens, to the sun, to the moon, to the stars, to that which is bigger than us. And it says, I'm open. I don't need to protect this thing called the self. I'm actually opening up to the broader world, to the universe at large. And I don't need to protect myself. And it's actually impossible to connect to that broader thing with the layers of protection being there in stalwart ways. So it becomes a beautiful dance, really, of excuse me, stepping into our own tenderness, working through our own emotional pieces, becoming vulnerable, moving through humility, and being able to open up in broader, richer ways. Okay, loves, we're going to tap this part out here. Invitation to breathe and to receive however feels right for you. Okay. Just give that a round of breath. We're integrating that by linking cortices to the sphenoid, where it becomes external at the temples. So your sphenoid, master bone, connects all your skull bones, super cool bone. And it's meant to create a balance within the skull that optimizes clarity. It also holds the pituitary gland that regulates all the hormones, so as it rocks and moves with the breath. It's also meant to regulate the hormones. Regulated hormones and clarity tend to work together. And so it's like the interplay between the endocrine system and the nervous system in a really powerful way. So as we balance cortices to it, it's optimizing and integrating left and right. So it's bringing in a sense of, I think of it as support to actively maintain your center, your midline, and balancing not just masculine and feminine, but allowing for then you to rest harmoniously in the center of unification. Okay, loves, breathing here, receiving here. I'm going to do cortices the longhand way. If anybody wants instructions on how to do cortices for yourselves or other people, I have an email, a handout that I will happily send you. Just let me know. Okay, giving that another round of breath. There's a song that I'm gonna play just shortly here. if you would like to reflect, contemplate, reconcile how your intentions met your session today, and or just simply rest, and or simply meditate on the meditate, meditate maybe, and or mindfully receive, savor, drink in the resource that you found earlier or a new one. I'm going to invite you to do that now. The song, let me see how long it is. I lost where to go. There it is. It's just under 4 minutes. It's called, interestingly enough, This Fits Into a Degree with Our Session, Without Expectation by Trevor Hall. I'll pop the link into the chat feature for everybody. Okay. Enjoy. Happy breathing and receiving. Thank you, Trevor Hall. All right, y'all. Thank you so much for being here and being here exactly as you are. Thank you to the medicine that you all carry and sharing that all in these ways with us all. We're the richer for it. Wishing you a beautiful day and week ahead. Mwah. Kausai to life. All right, my loves. If anybody would like any additional support, feel free to hang out and let me know. I'm going to hit stop on the recording here.